The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
The O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA. Meet the racers of America's most exciting short track racing series every Wednesday night from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. From the Milwaukee Mile to Bristol Motor Speedway, Five Flags in Nashville, the ASA is the racing series where young talent meets wily veterans in extreme short track competition. O'Reilly is America's auto parts store, and the ASA is America's premier late model series. O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane gets you close to the action and behind the scenes with the real stories from the drivers themselves. The O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA.
And this is the O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane. I'm Jack Smith, and he is
Terry Wall.
The day before Thanksgiving, 2007. How's that?
You're way too old to be me.
Yeah. Okay. Cute. So the O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane for this week, who we got lined up today yet, Terry?
We got Bobby Donner. In fact, Bobby's on the line. We're going to have Ron Barney on and guests to be named later.
Yeah, well, maybe we can get Ron to let go of a few tidbits that nobody else knows about yet. You never know. But I'll tell you. Yeah, so, Jeff Choquette, I hate beating this horse to death, but it's just too amazing. The kid is, he's really been on a roll. He won the Southern Division ASA, Late Model Southern Division Championship.
Uh-huh.
Then, he went and won the Florida Governor's Cup 200, which is the biggest super late model race for the regular Florida super late model guys. And, he won that in Dick Anderson's car, and now he's going up to the Snowball Derby along with a host of other, ASA late model alumnus and rookies and like that. So it should be a pretty exciting time over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, Florida racing right now is a hotbed of racing. Everybody and anybody's going to be down here. Plus, they're going to have, what do they call that?
We got the
days in a row?
Well, you got the all that stuff in February. It gets crazy. But
yeah,
we got the PRI show coming up. And,
right.
Huge sprint car stuff, so there's a lot of stuff going on, no doubt. But
right,
let's get right to it and introduce our guest here that we have on the line.
Yeah. We have Bobby Donner on the line right now, and Bobby Donner is a longtime racer, and he's going through some tough times now. We're going to try and help him out a little bit, but welcome to the O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane, Bobby.
Well, I really appreciate you guys having me on today.
Welcome, man.
And I'll do the lead here because I've known Bobby, I don't want to know how old we are, Bobby, but I've known Bobby since he started racing when he was 16 years old at Raceway Park in Blue Island, Illinois. And I'm not going to ask you how old you are now, Bobby, because that would give it away. But I remember back in the day, and I'll tell that one little story real quick, but when he was 16, in this track, Jack, you got to remember, you know Auburndale Speedway.
Yes,
well, this track
yes.
was just a little smaller.
Okay.
And Bobby went into turn three wide one time, and the guy on the outside lost, and Bobby had to hide driving out the track. Norm, his bodyguard, had to drive him outside the track, and Bobby was hiding. So I just had to get that in, Bobby.
Thanks.
And Bobby's the son of Bob Donner, who was an ARCA champion. Didn't he win a championship in ARCA, Bobby?
Yeah, he won it like three times.
Yeah, and he's the son of Bob Donner. And again, welcome to the show. And I guess to start out here, Bobby, this is an ASA show, and you ran the ASA for a few years, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, that's where I may have met some of my connections that actually helped me get down south and drove for Jerry Gunderman there with Miller as a sponsor, and it opened a lot of doors for me and was able to help me get into the Busch Grand National.
Now, as far as the new ASA, the big deal in that is the crate motors, and I know you're a fan of the crate motors, and what do you think about the way the direction the new ASA is going?
Well, it's kind of a fall back to, other than the Cray Motor side, to back when I was running ASA at first, where, you know, you could race at Grundy County on Friday night, and if you didn't tear your car up, load up and go to an ASA race the next day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what really helped the series grow, with a lot of local drivers being able to do that. And as it did grow and got TV, it got to be its own specialized little series, and, you know, that made it harder for people to move up to that level.
Well, I know that a lot of hard work you put into the ASA and also the Busch Series. A little story, Bobby was the original guy who got the DeWalt sponsorship when he was in the Busch Series, and you won one, two, or three Busch races.
I was able to win one race, and while driving for DeWalt, we had a couple pole positions, and one at Charlotte and one at Milwaukee there, the new track record, and finished seventh in points both years. Had some really good things happening there, and just unfortunate, some things changed, and, I mean, we were in the middle of contract negotiations to two more years in Busch, and then me as the driver moving up to Winston Cup with them, and other teams, of course, always start trying to move in on the situation, and they decided that Hermie Sadler was a better option for them, and ended up losing the deal, and ended up kind of effectively starting the downward spiral of losing my Busch Grand National career.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jack.
I was going to say, when you were racing with the ASA, Bobby, who were some of the people, who were some of the toughest competitors that you raced against at that time?
Well, I mean, it was when everyone, you know, the Dick Trickle, Mike Eddy, Bob Seneker, it's when all the guys that were the ASA guys forever and ever were there. And personally, I had the toughest times running with Mike Eddy. It seemed like we just always seemed to want the same piece of racetrack.
Well, that made it exciting for the fans, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I remember we brought up, at the time, Howie Lateau was my crew chief, and we had worked all night the night before building a new car for Milwaukee, and our home base was right about four blocks from the racetrack there with Baker Enterprise, and we got it done and went to the track and qualified like third or fourth with it, and had a car that could win the race, and I was trying to pass Mike Eddy for about 15 laps, couldn't get around him, and I kept trying to pass him on the bottom, and he kept motioning me for to go to the outside, and so finally I went out there, and he kind of squeezed me out towards the wall, so the next lap I went like I was going out, and I dove under him, and down the backstretch I got all the way up to his door, and he just flat turned left and put us both into the inside guardrail, and afterwards when he got out of his thing, he says, well, if I wasn't going to win, you weren't going to win.
Wow.
That's blunt.
I deal with his son at Howl Racing. Howl Racing's the sponsor of our show. And isn't that sort of typical of Mike Eddy in the ASA?
It was at that time. Like I said, you know, I was still a little younger then and a little hard-headed, and I just didn't want to accept that you had to race him with a little more respect than I probably did at that time. And, you know,
right.
He tried to show me that I needed to give him a little more respect.
Well, yeah, Mike Eddy, there's a ton of stories. I know Mike Eddy's not a fan of the media either. And the media really had a hard time with Mike Eddy back in the day. But,
well, as I said, there was two different schools at that time. The drivers, like myself, that were, you know, aware of the media and aware of that if we ever wanted to go anywhere, you had to do a lot of different things than what them older drivers that had been in ASA and were happy to be in ASA. They just wanted to go win ASA races, and they weren't too big on the other side of it. And, you know, that changed, obviously, in the following years there when Jimmy Johnson and a lot of these guys came in and
sure.
Really realized the importance of the media side of it.
So, it like, guys like Gary St. Amon, he would be, like, on the cusp where he was kind of the new crossover?
When I was there, he was the new guy, and, you know, obviously he lasted a lot longer there than I did, and so he turned into them, but he, you know, he saw both sides of it, and I think he, you know, he transitioned very well with the series.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's about the time I started watching the ASA. It was during, you know, like when Jimmy Johnson was, you know, because they started coming down to Florida to open their seasons, and, you know, we got to see those guys then. And, of course, Gary's went on to other things too. But so what are you doing these days? What in these days, what's Bobby Dotter doing?
Well, I'm a part owner. I have a partner, Gene Christensen. we own two truck teams, NASCAR truck teams, the 07 and the 08 teams. Tim Sauter drove for us this year, and Chad McCombie drove for us. And Tim gave it a real strong run for the Rookie of the Year, and we come up just about three positions short in the final race of the year there, and he got second in the Rookie of the Year. But we've been in the truck series now for about 7 years or so, and started out I was the driver. And as I got to my 40s, finding sponsorship became increasingly difficult, so I opted to get out of the driver's seat and move over to the ownership side and put younger drivers in that can, you know, a lot of times bring sponsorship with them and generate sponsorship. So that's what we've been doing for about the last 5 years now.
Yeah, you know, we had to go ahead, Jerry.
Have you got Hank and Bobby to drive it one more time?
Oh, yeah. I've certainly not said that I'm done racing. I mean, up till last year, I had always at least got to go run one or two races a year still, either in the trucks or a couple years ago I went to Toledo for the ARCA race at the end of the year, and just the way things have played out the last few years here, I just haven't been able to do it. But I still, six years ago, I ran Winston West, and me and Brendan Gaughan had a heck of a year, and I finished second in points to him, and I won like 4 out of 12 races, and the car I won the 4 out of 12 races is the car I took to Toledo, and I actually keep that car at home in my garage at home, and even though it needs a new body now because of the updates and stuff, I still figure we're going to race that sometime.
When did you get started in the Craftsman Truck Series?
Well, after the Busch thing kind of fizzled for me there about 97 or so, I actually took a few years off from driving and went to crew chiefing. And through that, we ran Winston West, and I met a car owner, Gene Christensen, who owned a Winston West car, and he was going to do a driver's change at the end of the year, so I ended up driving for him. And like I said, we had just an unbelievable year, won a bunch of poles, won 4 races, and almost won the championship. And at the end of that year, the team was based out of Texas, so I was flying to Texas to work on the stuff, and I still had my shop here in North Carolina. So at the end of the year, we moved everything to North Carolina and decided to go after the truck series. And I believe that was 2001, and I drove in like 2001 and 2002 in the trucks, and finished 14th in points both years, and then ended up moving over to the owner side.
That's cool. We had Dennis Huth on our show last night, our Real Racing USA live show, for about 45 minutes talking about the early days, the creation days of the Craftsman Truck Series. It was fascinating.
Yeah, I just ran a few hit and miss races back when Dennis was in charge. By the time I actually went full time, Wayne Naughton had taken over, so that's really the only one I've dealt with on a full-time basis.
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, I didn't realize it, but I think he said Mike Skinner won the first race.
Yep.
In the Goodrich Chevrolet.
Is that right?
Number 3, as a matter of fact.
So how do you see, how do you think the whole deal is going now? Where do you see stock car racing at right now?
Well, down here, it's just since I actually moved down here in 1989, so I've been here quite a while. And
that's Carolina?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's gotten to be just such a money game. I mean, I was able to really have some relatively good success with my truck team. You know, when Chad McCombie was driving for me, we qualified second at Nashville. We had a number of top 10 runs and really had some good things happening. But the money aspect of it has just gotten so expensive with the motor programs and everything else that, you know, to generate that kind of money, for years what I've been able to do is put drivers in that just had family money.
Right.
It's gotten to the point now that the money it takes to do this is more than most families can just be shelling out. So it's made it very difficult for the small teams.
Yeah, there's so many, you know, there's this whole group. I mean, there's this huge number of kids, youngsters, you know, who, because of the, I guess, increased exposure of NASCAR in the media over the last 10, 15 years, and they, you know, that's a dream for so many people now, and there's so many youngsters racing at the local and in the smaller traveling series, like the ASA, for instance, which is, you know, a pretty national series. But, you know, it's so tough for them, man. It's like we tell people, if you want to make it, unless you got you know, Fort Knox, you better move to North Carolina. You know, it's so tough.
No, but the ASA thing is really still a good proving ground for drivers. You know, some of the drivers that are successful there right now boy, the one rookie of the year in the challenge there, Sean Murphy.
Sure.
He actually drove for me for about 10 races in my truck.
Great kid, huh?
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, he just had limited late model experience. But, you know, we took him to places like Atlanta and Charlotte, and he led laps and ran, like, on the lead lap 12th and 13th. But then we went to the short track, and he kind of struggled a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'm very good friends and a business associated with Ken Smith of ASI, and so we kind of decided that that was something that was going to help him in the long run because, you know, Sean's definitely going to end up down here again and get another chance, and I think he's going to be a lot better driver for it.
Bobby, if we got a guy out there that's got a couple $1 million listening to the show right now, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, you know, we have a email here of GLR, as in Green Light Racing, GLR0708@AOL.com. And we're, like I said, in Mooresville, North Carolina. And, you know, I'm talking to a lot of people right now. You know, you mentioned Jeff from down in Florida there. I talked to him a few weeks ago and talked to Trent Schneider here a few weeks ago. So, you know, ASA is definitely a place that, as an owner, I'm looking for drivers. And, you know, I know there's some good drivers there, some good young drivers there. Just, again, unfortunately, the numbers it takes to go racing in this truck series. And if you take a deal on where you don't get enough money, which some of them say, oh, well, you know, we understand we're going to struggle, but it's not good for their career, and it's just not a good move right now. It's just so hard to be competitive.
I remember back in the day when this truck series started, the PR memo was that you could run the whole truck series for $500,000. And that was supposed to be a cheap way to go to NASCAR. Well, now, obviously, Bobby, it takes way more than $500,000.
What is it? What is it, ballpark?
Well, I mean, just ballpark. I mean, you know, the really, really tough side of the truck series right now is, like, for this year, Tim Sauter, we finished 16th in points, and our total earnings for the year was, like, $288,000. And our motor program, to lease motors, which everyone does down here, we had a Wagner, Carl Wagner treats me really, really good, and still the engine side of it cost $600,000. So, you know, just go from there and see how, I mean, if you want to be even remotely competitive, you have to, I mean, I do it on probably the smallest budget out of any of the teams that are in that guaranteed top 30. And, you know, we still have to spend like $1.2 million, $1.3 million to do it the way we do things.
And crew chiefs are not cheap.
No, and that's why, you know, I end up basically crew chiefing one of the teams myself to try to save that money. And, you know, I've got another excellent crew chief that we can share all of our information together with. But it's, you know, like I said, it's just getting more difficult. And that's a real downside, you know, getting back to when you were saying about how they advertised it being cheaper. Well, it used to be, you know, we had that mid-race break. The bodies were genuine truck fenders and stuff that you put them on and you cut the wheel well open and you were done. Well, when I went to the truck series, all that stuff was very attractive to me. And versus, they were paying almost identical to the Busch races at that time. So my cost was like 50% of running Busch, but yet the payoff was just as good. Well, you know, 10 years later now, our payoffs are less than 50% of what the Busch races pay, and our expenses are almost identical.
Yeah.
But not
so to do it right, you're going to need $2-3 million.
Well, most of the Toyotas and the big, you know, the big heavy hitter teams, they all operate on 3.5 or more.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a matter of when people call me and say, how much does it take? I just say, you know, the absolute bottom we can do it for is around $1.2 million, and we got to really scrape and scratch at that. And if we want to, if you want to be more competitive, how much more money do you have?
Right. Yeah. So when you're, so these days, the reality is, even at the Craftsman truck level, and this may sound a little naive, but really there's, I mean, I talk to people who have no clue, who, you know, they want their kids to progress and so forth. They have no clue about any of this expense. And is it like it's got to be just an extreme balancing act between talent, who has the talent and who can bring the money.
Exactly. And what really makes it tough is when you do work with some drivers that do have the talent, and then you go back to having to put drivers in that just have the money, it's a real tough thing for the whole team to rally behind them when you know you've got a better truck than that, and you know that during practice you might stick a different driver in and they go out there and go a second faster, and yet you got to be happy about it, and you got to be positive about what, you know, what you got, because that's the only way we keep in business is by, you know, the drivers bringing the money.
Yeah. Do the sponsors at that level, when the big money sponsors who are helping fund those kinds of dollars for racing, do they really get aggressive about the type of driver that you have, or are they just looking for the good spokesman?
Well, unfortunately, if you look at the truck series, there are hardly no real sponsors. I mean, the manufacturers, Toyota sponsors a bunch of their teams, you know, Chevrolet was sponsoring a bunch of their teams for a while. The truck series is a hard sell. It's just that, you know, for what it takes, what you got to ask a sponsor for what you can give them in return, I mean, it's great racing.
The best.
In my opinion, it's way better for a young driver to come truck racing than it is to go bush racing. You know, we've got the splitters in the front. We've got 112-inch wheelbase. The trucks drive so much more like the car of tomorrow. You know, my driver that I keep talking about, Chad McCombie, he got the opportunity this year to jump in Kyle Petty's car for a few races. You know, and he went out there and immediately took to it and, you know, ran really well with it. And I think that, you know, it's a really smart thing for the young drivers to do that, to go come to the truck series.
Right. But on the other hand, if a guy wants to sometimes it doesn't help them if they're going to get in the race and ride at the, you know, not have the equipment and the team and everything to do really well, not have the equipment and the setup to do really well, sometimes it's not good for their career, huh?
No, it's not, and that's why I said that, you know, to learn the tracks and to just get your feet wet, that's one thing, but to do it on a prolonged basis, you know, it's just not going to get you anywhere. But, you know, the alternative is, you know, if you, some drivers I know down here spent a whole bunch of money to try to get in absolutely the best equipment they could for only like two or three races. That's all they could afford by spending that much money.
Right.
And the races didn't go good. They only got to run three or four races for the whole year, and they were like, man, that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Impact does the, I'm assuming some of the Cup drivers own teams and whatnot, and what impact does that have?
Well, like I said, Kevin Harvick owns a team, but, you know, there isn't a lot of that goes on. You know, for a while there, Childress had a team and DEI had a team and all that. They've all kind of got away from it, so there's not that much of that going on. The biggest thing is the manufacturer support. You know, when Toyota came in, they brought 10, you know, very well-financed teams with them. And, you know, we were consistently a truck team that could operate between 10 and 15 almost every week. Sometimes I'd say 5 to 15, really. Well, when you threw 10 Toyotas with Mike Skinners and Johnny Bensons and these drivers, all of a sudden my same exact equipment, now we're struggling to be 15th through 25th. And when you're, you know, when you're trying to sell a program and trying to sell someone to bring me $1 million or $1 million+, kind of hard to tell them that, well, you know, we're going to go and we're going to run, and on a good day we might finish 23rd.
Right.
You know, when you could tell them before that on a good day we got a good chance of being 10th or so, or top 10 or something, it was a lot easier to do. And unfortunately, like I said, this influx of money when the Toyotas came in really has made it a tough deal.
Yeah. Go ahead, Terry.
You want me to give Toyota a call, see if they won't take your team over? I mean, I can do that for you, Bobby.
Nice.
I mean, you could settle for $3.5 million to run your team next year.
I could settle for that, yeah.
Yep. So, Bobby, what kind of advice, just to finish up this point of this deal, what kind of advice would you give, you know, say a 20-year-old who has had some success on a touring series? What kind of advice would you give them to get to the big top?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing is they do need to do some kind of a touring series. That's why I think the ASA is great. You know, a series that made pit stops is even more of an asset, because I found that with the trucks, you know, when somebody comes to me that's never too much on pit stops, that really throws a wrench in the works too. So, you know, that's where I like the old ASA a little bit, where there was the pit stops and the longer races that you had to, you know, figure out pit strategy and all that. But the biggest thing is that you do need to do some touring. You need to be, you know, well-versed in a lot of different kinds of tracks, because, you know, with the truck series or any of the NASCAR series that's down here, they've outlawed testing at the real tracks you race at. So for these rookies, they give you an extra half hour of practice. Well, you know, you've already burned up your first set of tires being out there trying to learn the track, and then you do get an extra half hour, but it's not like being able to take a driver and go test.
Yeah.
Well, again, Bobby, if somebody was listening wanted to get in touch with you to possibly either rent your truck or sponsor you, how would they get a hold of you again?
Probably the best thing is over the an email on glr0708@aol.com.
glr0708@aol.com.
That's it, Terry.
And what are the truck numbers that you're running?
07 and 08.
All right.
Yeah, Chad McCombie and Tim Sauter.
I really don't have drivers right now because, you know, Lester Builders, which has been Tim Sauter's sponsor for a number of years, they've decided to take a step back and not be in the sport this year. And then Chad McCombie's looking like, you know, he's supposed to be doing a lot more with the Petty family this year. He's going to run all the races that Kyle's going to be commentating for, and they're trying to put together a full-time Busch program for him, too. So basically right now, both seats are wide open for the whole year. And, you know, and like I said, in the recent weeks here, I've probably talked to no less than four ASA-type drivers that are potentially interested in doing something with me. We're just got to figure out a way to come up with funding.
Yeah, we need a hot shoe who's aggressive, wants to get there, and can bring some sponsorship.
That's what we need.
Okay.
Well, we'll help you out, Bobby. We talked to a lot of people, and like I said, I'm going to be down at the PRI show, and I'll meet up with you there, and we'll see what we can do.
You'll be at the PRI show?
I'm sorry?
You're going to be at the PRI show, Bobby?
Yes, I am. I'm go down there, and if I don't have anything put together by then, be just going around politicking.
There you go. Yeah, I was telling him yesterday, man, I take a big, heavy pad of paper.
And people that at 16 years old go three wide in a quarter-mile track in politics, I can tell you that right now.
Well, I tell you what, I wish, this is a personal note, I wish I could get, man, I'd love to see Jeff Choquette get a shot at this thing. He has a huge fan base, and he's just been, I mean, for me personally, he's just been fun to watch grow up. I watched him when he first started running over at East Bay in the dirt, and when he was like just a little kid, you know, really, he's been exciting to watch. I'll tell you what, one of the funniest things, I've been into doing the racing media for about 10 years, and one of the coolest things I ever seen was in 2004 when Jeff Choquette showed up at the Florida Governor's Cup. Nobody knew him because he'd been racing dirt. He'd only raced one asphalt race of any consequence. Nobody knew who he was. You know, Don Nerone, all they've got, nobody knew who he was, none of the drivers. And I told a few people, you better watch out for that number 70. He went out and won the very first Governor's Cup he was ever in, and they were all shocked. Who is this kid? You know, it was just amazingly funny.
All right. Well, we're going to tell you goodbye now, Bobby, and we sure appreciate you being on the show. And we'll continue to wish you success.
We'll be looking for that 07 and 08.
Yep. And we'll be in touch.
Okay, that's what we're hoping to have on the track next year. And another ASA driver that I'm real high on, I've been having my eye on, is Jesse Smith. We've talked quite a bit, too. And
yeah,
he's someone that I'd like to maybe get down here, too.
Yeah, we haven't had him.
Maybe we can put either Trent Snyder or Jeff Choquette in one, and then Jesse Smith in the other.
Well, that's why I said you've got quite a variety of drivers there that have all got the right, you know, ability and stuff. We just got to give them the right opportunity.
All right.
There'd be three guys bringing money, and you have to have a third truck.
We've got the 06. That's our starting park special.
Maybe we'll catch up with you. We'll try to catch up with you, man. Thanks.
Bye.
All right.
Bobby Dodder. That was a great interview, Jack.
Very good. Very nice guy. And, you know, that guy's sincere, man. He's got sincerity all about. He's all about sincere, and that's cool.
Yeah. I just hope, I wish him good luck, and hopefully he can find something at the PRI show.
Well, it gives you an idea how tough it is, it's not just about the talent, it's about how bad you want it and
how much money mom and dad had,
well, and how much you can go out there and sell yourself and bring some sponsorships, because you got to take your talent to the table and you got to bring your sponsors to the table,
right?
And there's not very many it's a tough combination, but let's go to break. I guess we're going to come back with the president
and the man.
Yeah, well, okay. We'll be right back.
All right.
You are listening to the O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane. We'll be right back. When purchasing a technical product like brakes, there is no substitute for quality and experience. In the performance industry, no one has more experience than the brakeman. The brakeman has been designing high-performance solutions for a variety of applications for almost 40 years. The current products from the brakeman are among the most advanced on the market. The Tornado calipers are the only calipers in the performance industry to carry a U.S. patent number and their new line of pads and rotors. The Brakeman Super Brakes are solving brake problems on hard-use vehicles, from police cars to ambulances and a variety of fleet vehicles. So if you're towing a trailer, carrying heavy loads, or just plain want to extend the life and stopping power of your vehicle, it's time to call the Brakeman. On the web at thebrakeman.com.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes. Today we salute you, Mr. Footlong Hot Dog Inventor.
Mr. Footlong Hot Dog Inventor.
When conventional wisdom said no one could make a hot dog longer than 6 inches, you dared to dream.
Dared to dream.
You knew the limitations of a regular size hot dog bun, and you ignored them.
Can't stop me now.
You made a 10-inch wiener, and people cheered. But you weren't satisfied. You said, wait, I think I can still give you 2 more inches.
Gotta want it.
And so the footlong was born. So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Hot Dog Hero, because you gave every single one of us our fondest wish, a bigger wiener.
Thank you.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-Star Race Car Bodies. 5-Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-Star has one driving passion: to help you win. 5-Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, Short Track Asphalt, Short Track Dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today at 5starbodies.com.
And this is the O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane, day before Thanksgiving. And we just talked to Bobby Dotter and Terry Wall, co-host here.
Yes.
Man, the day before, this year is just flew, huh? Day before Thanksgiving, unbelievable.
Yeah, day before Thanksgiving, and I'm gonna cook a turkey tomorrow. The first time in my life I've cooked a turkey.
It's the first time for everything, Terry.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a turkey myself, and I've been cooked many times, but.
Were you able to, let me ask you something here, were you able to find, get into the president's office there and get the president on the line?
Oh, yes, I did. In fact, he's listening to us as we speak.
All right. Welcome to the show, Mr. Ron Varney, president of the ASA Late Model Series.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jack, for having me on.
Hey, you know, we
anything
had...
Anything new going on?
Well, there's all kinds of stuff going on. Some we can talk about, some we can't.
Okay.
Well, you'll be the judge of that.
We just want to talk about the stuff we can, right, Jack?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Go ahead, Ron.
What's new, Ron? What's new in the ASA world?
Yep.
Well, really, I mean, we just finished up our pre-registration for returning drivers. I think we're at just shy of 150 drivers so far, and it just got open to the public today, so... You know, we expect big things, you know, for 2008. We're putting the final touches on our schedule. There's going to be a couple, hopefully pretty big name tracks added on to our Challenger schedule next year. Hopefully we can be making an announcement about that in about a week or so. But one of them is down there in Rockingham that just got bought by
Andy Hillenburg.
Andy Hillenburg. And, you know, hopefully we get that deal done and we can announce it soon. And
that'd be great.
You know,
that would be awesome.
You know, we talked to Andy last month, I believe, and I'll tell you, man, it's so cool to have him taking that place over, man. It's just awesome.
Well, it's nice to see a traditional track like that get bought by a true racer and somebody who's going to put his heart and soul into bringing racing back to the Rockingham area.
Yeah, I went up there. I was up there in February for the IHRA drag racing there deal right across the street, and I had never been there. And, you know, I stood across there with my wife, and it was looking like I was looking at a museum, you know, and a monument, and I thought, how sad this is. And then, you know, when I went back up there for another event this late in the year, and by then we had already talked to Andy, and it was like a whole different thing. This is cool, man. I went riding around the neighborhood and rode all around that area, 5 miles this way and the other, and I just love it up there. It's a great place.
Absolutely. We're just, like I said, we're just glad it's back, it's open, and, you know, we will be there at some point, you know, if for some reason we don't get the deal done this year. You know, with the talks I've had with Andy, it will be definitely for sure in 2009. But we are still trying to get everything done in place to be out there for next year.
So you're going to keep them on the miles or less, right?
Yes. I mean, unless something comes up, you know, on something that might be just tick over a mile, like Rockingham is, but no mile and a half or anything like that. You know, we're just, our cars aren't made for that, and I'm not looking to take us to any place like that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've had offers. I know, you know, Kentucky Speedway was very interested in bringing us out, and, you know, I very politely and respectfully declined. I just don't think that our cars are you know, made for tracks going that fast, and you know, it's just my opinion that I just don't think that we need to be there.
I think Rockingham's like 1.33 or something. It's just over a mile, isn't it, Ron?
Yeah, it's just a tick over a mile. It's going to be fast. It's going to be probably the fastest track that we race on, you know, for at least a couple laps until the tires wear out.
Right. If you do sign Rockingham, will you do some tire testing up there?
Yeah, we've already talked with Hoosier, and they've got an ARCA test coming up at Rockingham, and if we get our deal done there, we'll probably go up there and tire test with during the ARCA test.
Okay.
Go ahead, Terry.
We talked just earlier. There are some other tracks that possibilities that you would like to go to, but you haven't have any commitments or anything yet?
Well, obviously, each year we contact Martinsville about going there and Richmond, and so far we haven't been able to break through. But it took us, I think 3 or 4 years to get into Bristol, and I still say they gave us a date just to keep for me hounding them every year. we're putting our deal together again for Bristol this year. We'll be back there. We haven't set the exact date yet. We're still hammering some things out, you know, there, but we will be back there. And, you know, I mean, I would love to go to, go to Richmond or go to Martinsville. And, you know, we'll just keep trying year after year to get into places like that.
I would even
venture a guess to say that at some point we're probably going to end up at a place like Gateway. You know, and again, that's a place that's just a tick over a mile long, but it's big and flat, and, you know, it's not...
Right.
It's not really much different than a Milwaukee mile as far as being flat with sweeping corners.
Right.
Well, you guys have a booth at the PRI, or you'll be down there?
Yeah, we do have a booth at PRI this year. We're a little bit bigger. We expanded. We've got two 10x10 booths next to each other. So, you know, as the series grows, so did we, and we decided it was probably time to get a bigger booth. So we'll actually have a little bit bigger of our presence down at PRI this year.
Cool. What other?
Are you going to have a car in the booth?
We won't have a car. We'll probably have a couple motors. There's probably going to be a big announcement coming about the 2009 season, believe it or not, here pretty quick. And, you know, we're probably going to have, like I said, a couple motors. We're going to have some the Hoosier radial tires and the Bi-Ply tires and some other promotional items in our booth.
Okay.
What... There's two things that I don't know. You know, you talked to Terry off the air, and I'm not sure what you wanted to talk to him about and what you didn't. There's two things that I hear a lot about. One is, and Bobby Dotter just brought up the one point, was about the hot pits. And the other one is television. Those two items are things I hear a lot from people, like, you know, we need a TV deal. And the other one is, you know, it's good experience, although it's expensive, you know, to do it all the time, to have hot pits because the guy's got to bring crew and all that. How do you feel about those two things and what's up with that?
Hot pits probably are not in the future for 08. I won't rule it out at a certain event or two in 09. I mean, it's really going to depend on where we end up with sponsorship and dollars, because obviously as you make the teams incur more money, you have to be able to help offset some of that cost through purses and things like that. So, you know, I'm not saying it's not a part of what we're looking at in the future. It's just not the immediate future.
Sure.
As far as TV goes, you know, we've got two proposals on the table right now for TV. You know, we probably will have some TV presence next year, whether it's the full schedule or whether it's, you know, three or four races. I mean, we will probably end up doing something, and as soon as we figure out what's our best course of action, we will probably, you know, schedule a press conference and make that announcement.
Yep. Well, can we get the scoop on the O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane first?
Oh, Terry, you're terrible. What, you know, during the course of the year, is there anything that you saw or, you know, that as far as the competition on the track, things that would change to as far as how that goes? Like, I mean, for instance, are you still committed to 100 laps green flag racing, just as an example? Are there things like that where you're committed to certain things, or is there things you have seen that you might change for next year?
Well, to answer your first question, yes, I'm still committed to 100 green flag laps of racing. And while we had some events this year that, you know, were brutal, I ain't going to kid anybody, you know, with cautions and things like that. At the same time, the fans come in and you know, they want to pay, if they're going to pay extra money to come see a traveling series, they want to see as much green flag racing as possible. And to, you know, to have them, you know, to pay $15 to $20 to come in and watch, you know, 50 laps of yellow flag racing, you know, as you're clicking laps off, that's not good for them. And they're going to leave probably with more of a bad taste in their mouth than having a bunch of yellows and still running 100 green flag laps. With that said, one of the things I'd like to see for next year, obviously, is some more veteran participation. I think that can only help with some of the kids that we've got running, and not saying that I'm not a fan of the young kids, but, you know, if they had more veteran leadership and, you know, some more veterans to mentor some of these kids, they wouldn't make some of the mistakes they make and cause some of the cautions that they cause. Not that they cause all of them, because we have our veterans that have their share, but a lot of times it seems to be the younger crowd that gets in trouble more often.
Amen. You know, we had I was at a 100-lap super late model race, at Charlotte County Motorsports Park 2 weeks ago, and there was two groups of cars. That was very clear. You know, there was the top group of probably eight cars, you know, the Wayne Andersons and guys like that, and then there was the second group of about eight or nine cars, and there was a couple of more that were way off the pace, just getting some laps and getting some experience. But there was essentially two groups of cars. They had 19 cautions in a 100-lap race, and there was all this clamoring after the race. You know, the officials wanted the owner, Bobby Deal, to change the deal and count cautions, and, you know, I told him, you know, I used you guys as an example. I said, you know, they have 12, 13 cautions in a lot of races, but, you know, the fans are coming. Like you said, the fans are coming to pay that. And he said, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, you take that second group of guys. And it was 17 of the 19 cautions were caused by the second group of cars. They weren't caused by the leaders. There was only two cautions involving the leaders. And you just got to tell them, guys, look, guys, you're putting on a show here. You don't have to try to, you know what I mean? You got to get the guys to listen and I think you're right, the veterans would help.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, it's something that we see, but yet, you know, I'm sure I'll get an email or two from somebody that's listening that says, yeah, but what about? And the perfect example that I have to bring up as far as a young kid is Alex Kennedy. I mean, here's a kid at 15 years old who goes out there and, you know, to the best of my knowledge, and I can't swear to it, but to the best of my knowledge, I don't think he ever touched somebody or got into somebody or turned around. And yet at the end of the year, he was running consistently in the top 10 and even had some top five finishes. I mean, it was just a joy to watch somebody that young race the way he did.
Sure.
You know, but then there's the flip side of that. I mean, we get, you know, a 15-year-old kid who probably needs another year in a local division or something else to get him some experience. And unfortunately, his dad or his sponsor has deep pockets, and this is where they want him to be. And it could make for a very tough learning curve.
But you have the three strikes, you're out rule.
Yeah, I mean, we do, and we enforce it, and it's tough. I mean, you know, it doesn't make anybody happy to get black flagged and kicked off the racetrack for causing three cautions, but, you know, at the end of the day, when you go down and explain to them why you did what you did, you know, while it's a bitter pill to swallow, they understand.
It was interesting. We were just talking with Bobby Dotter, and, you know, of course, the ASA was a theme throughout the interview, talking a lot about the Craftsman Truck Series, you know, and his teams and whatnot, and, you know, he felt, he definitely was looking at a number of drivers, you know, and felt the ASA was a great place for people to for the youngsters to get their skills honed, and that was kind of interesting, huh, Terry?
Yeah, and in fact, Bobby, you know, his dad, Bob Dotter, won the ARCA Series. He said three times, and Bobby started racing when he was 16 years old and moved his way up to the ASA. And then he was in the ASA with Seneca and Eddie. In fact, Ron, you should have heard the story he told about Mike Eddie. But he couldn't.
Yeah, that's
really
a difference. but he was really high on the kids, you know.
Yeah, he was really high on the ASA as far as a stepping stone
talent
to,
pool
of NASCAR and stuff.
Well, I mean, you know, we know what our place is in the racing world, and we don't make any statements that we're anything but what we are, and that really is a feeder series to the bigger places. And that's not to discourage any veterans from coming out and racing, because, as I said earlier, we need more of them. But, you know, we've made a place for ourselves in the industry where if you want your kid or somebody to get noticed or to move up in the ranks, that this is probably a place where you need them to come to.
Now, earlier you mentioned there was 150 drivers already registered.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was that a pretty even split between North, South, and Challenge?
Yeah, it is. I think we've got 40-some in the North and 40-some in the Challenge, and I think it was about 35 or so in the South. So,
uh-huh.
You know, I mean, it's a pretty good mix across the board, and I think, you know, as we get a little bit forward past the Thanksgiving holiday, you're going to see those numbers continuing to climb.
When will this final schedule be out?
Well, I mean, you know, we put the schedule a lot with tentative dates, and a lot of it is just trying to finalize contractual things that, you know, we have to dot every I and cross every T before we can make announcements, and then really that's what we're waiting for. And
gotcha.
You know, I got to believe that probably the holiday being, you know, right here at the end of the week probably hindered a little bit of that, but you know, hopefully we'll get some things done, and hopefully we can make an announcement on our finalized schedule next week.
Yeah.
You're not going to wait till PRI to make the announcement?
You know, I would like to get it out. Obviously, I'd like to get it out as soon as possible, and if I get it done, I'd probably announce it, you know, before we go, or make a big announcement there since we're so close to it anyway.
Right.
So what else will we be looking for in 2008?
Well, just a lot of continuation of what we did this year. I think it was very successful. I just, you know, I would like to continue getting us on a bigger and bigger stage, and I think probably the TV will be part of that, and hopefully, you know, we can get some more drivers to come in. You know, we've got a couple commitments from some of the drivers that have went through our series into the NASCAR ranks to come back and run some races, and we should be making announcements on that pretty soon, but it should be exciting.
Hmm. Okay.
Wow. We got a lot to look forward to.
Now, one of them I can hopefully say, and I hope we won't get too mad for saying it, but I know that that Landon Castle will be making some return appearances with us next year for sure. They've got a new team they're creating, and hopefully I didn't let the cat out of the bag too soon for him, but it should be pretty exciting.
Well, Landon Castle is signed with Childress Racing, I believe, isn't he?
Hendrick
Racing. Oh, geez. Mm. He's got another plum.
Yeah.
I think Alex Kennedy is another one that will be going next.
Well, I think so. Like I said, I mentioned Alex only because he's the first youngster to come to mind, but we've got so many of them. I know Travis Dassault is working on hopefully a Craftsman truck deal. He ran a couple races this year. He could probably end up in the Craftsman truck full time next year. So
uh-huh.
I know they're looking for some drivers maybe next year. And, there's just a lot of excitement going on. I mean, we just created our own forum board. That's good or bad no matter how you look at it. But,
Jack's been wanting me to visit that forum board and start trouble, but no, I'm kidding.
you know better than that.
I mean, it's supposed to be a conversation. I mean, it's supposed to, be opinionated. It's supposed to be controversial.
Right.
I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, I get on there. I don't duck any questions. I'll answer them. May not like the way I answer it, but at least we'll have an answer.
Well, that's one thing we need in this world is a promoter that's honest.
Yeah, it is, Rod. It's nothing more than a double-edged sword. I mean, it has its good points and bad points. I know, sometimes it can get a little crazy, but it's good to see you guys doing that. I think overall it's a good thing.
Well, I do, and if it gets too crazy, we've got the ability to go in and clean it up a little bit. But we try to let people have their piece and say. And the only thing I really would say to anybody that's posting on there is if you've got a legitimate gripe and a legitimate complaint, we want to hear about it, but at least be man enough to put your name behind it and stand behind what you say. I do. I don't hide behind a screen name. I sign my name in everything I post, and that's all I'm saying is there's a lot of people in the world that have a problem with me or don't like me or just can't stand me, and that's fine. And I don't need to be everybody's best friend. I need to be the best friends of the series I can and do what I think is right, and sometimes it rubs people the wrong way.
Well, it's interesting.
Jack's never had an experience with somebody posting something with no name, has Jack?
Yeah, oh my Lord. We recently changed our forum software so that we could, we've just come to the conclusion that, there's a difference between controversy and soap opera nonsense, and the kind of controversy we want is fans and arguing about whether their driver's better, and whether he took him out or the soap opera nonsense doesn't do anybody any good. And it's been interesting. We've talked to so many people recently, everybody from Dick Anderson, Wayne Anderson, Dennis Huth, and Bobby Daughter. He talked about it. All these guys we talked to, Fritz Augustine last night, they're all talking about like how much we really need to put a focus on the positive aspects of racing, because and that's been where our head's been going for the last year is it's easy to bitch and gripe about things. Like a race is like a game. It's like you go to a football game. Not all of them are the kind of game you want to see. Not all races are the kind of race you want to see, but it is what it is, and we need to enjoy it and promote it in a positive way, I think, a lot more than and we don't necessarily need to air all our negative feelings out in public, especially drivers,
Yes, I agree. As you say, there tends to be too much focus on the negative and not enough on the positive. I mean, there's a lot of good things going on in racing. While there's a lot of, things that in racing that are broke right now and need to be fixed, but we all have to realize that we're in this together, and if we want short track racing to continue and grow, then we all need to step up and do the best we can to help promote it and make it what it once was.
Absolutely.
And, a lot of that got lost on, as much as I hate to say it, a lot of that got lost on the new promoters, the promoters that are the race car drivers that decide they're going to buy a track because it closed down and think they can do it better.
Amen.
I've dealt with just about every type of racetrack promoter you can imagine, and I can tell you there's certainly a difference from the old, what I call the old school promoters that have owned the track for 30, 40 years to the ones that have owned it for 30 months. And, it is night and day difference.
There's no doubt, because the You know, we say that we make those comments all the time too, and you know, the fact of the matter is 90%, at least 90% of the race car drivers out there, even the car owners, they know nothing about really how the business end of the game works until when they jump into it with both feet, they spend 2 years getting an education.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the first thing everybody thinks is that the promoter's the one getting rich, when in reality it's probably just the opposite. You know, the promoter's doing everything he can to keep the doors open and keep his bills paid, you know, and make a lot of sacrifices. And you know, we do, and we did, and we continue to. You know, it's one of those deals. You do it because you have a love for the sport of auto racing, and you want to succeed, and you want to succeed, and you want it to continue on. And, you know, we're in that boat just like everybody else is.
So now, that being said, now you travel all over the country, and we talked about this a little bit earlier in the year. You travel all over the country, north and south. You talk to the promoters, the drivers. I mean, you get a bird's eye view of the whole game. How would you say that this whole thing is on a bit of a resurgence right now?
Well, I don't know about a resurgence, but I think we bottomed out. You know, I think we've seen the worst of the worst, and the only thing that could probably keep us at this level is the rising fuel cost. And with oil, you know, darn near hitting $100 a barrel today,
right,
is certainly not going to make things a lot easier. And that includes the fans that have to drive to the racetrack. You know, what we've seen is fans that normally would drive, you know, upwards of 100 miles to go to a racetrack because of certain races in town, had decided to stay home just because they can't afford the fuel to go there.
Sure enough. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, case in point, we had to make a decision for your Hickory race because, you know, we made a couple trips to cover, from the media perspective, to cover your races in North Carolina. And, you know, we just felt that, you know, we needed to stay home that time and cover something closer to home simply because of the cost of gas. You know, I mean, that was the overriding factor.
Yep.
Yeah, it comes into play.
Well,
go ahead, Terry.
Kept you long enough, and we really appreciate your time, Ron, and we hope continued success, and I know that hard work always pays off, and I know you and Sandy are working hard at making the ASA a success.
Well, thank you guys for having us on, and both of you have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too, man. Right. We'll see you at the PRI show, I'm sure.
All thank right. you, Ron.
All right, bye-bye.
Right. There we go. I'll tell you, sometimes you just hit the wrong buttons doing live radio, and this isn't even live radio. This is the only show that we do on Real Racing USA that is recorded. All our other shows are done live. I think we ought to start doing this show live.
I think so, too.
But I'll tell you, Bobby Donner and Ron Varney, great talking with those guys. A lot of insight.
Been listening to the O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane. We'll see you next time. Same time, same channel.